Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In just 3 weeks, several public school districts will begin the new school year. St. Louis Public Schools is one of them. And since the end of May, there's been a good bit of news about that district related to its response to the EF3 tornado that hit parts of St. Louis. STLPR education reporter Hiba Ahmed has been covering that news, and she joins us now to provide an overview. Hiba, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Hiba, let's go back to May 16th. That's the day of the tornado. And SLPS was still in session, right?
Absolutely. So that was one of the last Fridays of the school year. The tornado hit at that, you know, early afternoon time. So some students were still at school. They sheltered in place. So those tornado drills that are done every quarter came into play there. Many students were on their way home, either in district-provided cabs or on school buses. You know, I met one parent, Tasia Keys, who told me that her middle schooler was on the way home in a cab when the tornado hit, and like, you know, the cab driver had to call the mom, be like, what would you like me to do? She said, pull over, just wait it out, and then, you know, I'll reconnect with her later. And it was kind of a dramatic moment of being separated from her child during the storm, right? And there were also graduations happening. Fashan High School was having one at the time. They had to shelter in place. So, and then, of course, end of school year activities. So, yeah, that storm hit at a kind of key moment.
Mm-hmm. And there was time left, as you said, in the school year. Yeah. So what is it that happened for the rest of May?
Yeah, it was one more week of school. So the district reassigned some of the schools because they were damaged. Those 12 schools that were damaged in the immediate aftermath, that damage ranged from, you know, power outages to severe damage to roof and water damage. Those students were rerouted, but the district kind of gave parents and families the option of, like, you can send your kids if you need to, right? Mm-hmm. If you need this option for your kids, it's here. But also, we're not going to dock your kids if you choose to keep them home, mm-hmm. right? And that was the main big disruption that happened. And then, you know, summer school came around. Superintendent Millicent Borishade had said that they had banked for about 5,000 students to show up. Less than 2,500 students actually attended summer school in those early weeks.
Do they have any idea what accounted for that difference?
I think a lot of it was that parents were very scared to be separated from their kids in the immediate aftermath. That's what a lot of school administrators shared with me. You know, again, the storm hit during this kind of key moment when students were away from their parents at school. And I think parents were feeling a little anxious about sending their kids back to school. A lot of, you know, some of the summer schools were being housed at some of the buildings that were damaged as well. So those plans also changed. Maybe transportation played a key role as well. So, yeah, but I think it was a lot of that kind of, you know, immediate trauma after that storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned 12 buildings?
Yeah, 12 buildings were damaged in the immediate aftermath. However, that number has been scaled down because a lot of the schools just experienced power outages, so they were able to get the power back up. But there are 7 schools that are not going to open in time for the start of the school year, which is August 18th. Mm-hmm. Those schools include Ashland, Hickey, Washington Montessori, Yateman Middle School, Soldan High School, Sumner High School, and some of the programs that are housed at Beaumont High School. Mm-hmm. All of those schools have been now relocated to other schools within the district.
Mm-hmm. And the breadth of that, too. I mean, yeah. We're talking elementary, middle, and secondary.
Right. 2,000 students, roughly.
2,000 students.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been following, you know, what's been happening with St. Louis Public Schools building and campus closures that are specific to tornado damage. Yeah. I mean, is there something that is notable there? I mean, perhaps around the way decisions have been made in that regard?
Sure, yeah. So the plan was released in June. And then there was some pushback in July from the teachers union and the saying that, hey, you know, you should incorporate teacher and staff into these conversations about relocating these students. There was some concern about bringing in different student populations, especially at the middle and high school level, all into one building. The idea is that sometimes there are some tensions, neighborhood tensions among the students that may filter into the schools. So the district did recalibrate, came up with a slightly different plan. Some of the high school students, I think, originally were going to attend, like Sumner students were going to go to Clyde C. Miller. Now the Sumner students are going to go to a different school. Mm-hmm. So the main thing here, Elaine, is that all of these schools that are not opening in time for the start of the school year are in North City. It's along that corridor of the path of the tornado. And there's some real concerns about, you know, the future of those schools, you know, as the district also navigates school closures.
Yeah. In terms of what SLPS families are feeling, based on what you have heard, either directly or indirectly, mm-hmm. what kinds of concerns are there about these school reassignments?
I think there's lots of questions around transportation. Some of these schools are much farther away from their home-based neighborhood schools. And then I think that the other point here is that there are a lot of families that are still displaced by the storm. They are in temporary housing, so that could be hotels or Airbnbs covered by insurance or FEMA, or they're, you know, crashing with friends or family. And some of that's in the city, some of that's in the county. So that's a big concern here, is that families may still not be back in their homes in time for the start of the school year. And of course, Elaine, all of this is incredibly disruptive for these children. You know, routine is a really, really big part of young children's lives, right? And so having that disrupted by this storm, not having the same place where you go to school, maybe not having the same bus ride or the walk to school, that can have a real impact on kids.
And a lot of these kids, I mean, they have also gone through the pandemic.
Right.
I mean, to what extent, if any, do you think that the pandemic made schools and people more able to deal with unexpected situations like this?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think schools and the staffing have become a little bit more prepared about and agile with maybe addressing some of the students' mental health concerns, right? So I have heard from administrators at SLPS that they plan to have some additional staffing at the receiving schools to make sure that, you know, students are being greeted with warm and welcoming kind of vibes, to just make sure that the kids are feeling a sense of continuity. Mm-hmm. A lot of their teachers and staff from their previous schools, the storm damaged schools, will also be at their receiving schools. So that's also a great way that I think that the staff and administrators are stepping up to kind of make sure that they're filling in any gaps for the students as they kind of face these disruptions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is yet another thing that these kids are having to face, right?
Yeah. Well, teachers and administrators are part of the school community. Mm-hmm. What is it that they have questions about? Are they similar to those of families?
Yeah, I think definitely transportation, are the kids. But I think the big thing is, Elaine, are the kids going to show up to school? Attendance and enrollment is a really critical point here. We've learned that, you know, we said earlier about 2,000 students are impacted across the 7 closed schools. They don't know if all 2,000 of those students are necessarily going to show up to their receiving schools for the start of the school year. So I think that's top of mind right now for teachers and administrators.
Mm-hmm. I had a chance to talk with an SLPS parent the other day.
Yeah.
And she has 2 daughters who are starting grades 1 and 2, respectively. Okay. And these are Ashland Elementary students. Mm. And they were in the building when the tornado hit. It took this parent some time to get to her kids because she had to finish work first at a daycare. Yep. And a colleague actually dropped her off 2 blocks from the school. Mm. So she said, as she was walking toward the school, because the roads were impassable,
of course,
she said it was like pitch black, the windows were blown out. And she had said that maybe in some ways it's a good thing that kids are not having to go back to the buildings they were in when the tornado hit.
Sure.
Is that something that you have heard you know, maybe from other parents or from SLPS staff?
Absolutely. I mean, safety is definitely top of mind for all of the administrators and families. You know, I've heard this over and over again, like they are not going to send their kids and the students back to buildings that are just not safe, secure, and then just welcome for the kiddos, right? I mean, these are historic buildings. And if there is the level of water damage that we're hearing about from the tornado, from those damaged roofs, and they're not ready to open in time for the students, I mean, that's just not a great environment to welcome students back into. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So school building and campus closures, you mentioned this, that is, a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. but there are issues that are not directly because of tornado damage.
Yeah.
So there was a report that was put out recently about prospective closures, you know, for yes. the next school year. Tell mm-hmm. us about that.
Yeah, so a new report from Cordigan Clark and Associates. So this is a architecture firm that was hired by the district about 2 years ago to survey the district's 68 schools and conduct a demographic study. And what this report found is that the city of St. Louis, and we've talked about this before, is facing a population decline. Mm-hmm. And they estimate about a projected decline of about 7%. So that's general population. But then they push that number upwards for student or school-aged kids. So that's about 30% they're saying that SLPS could face a decline. That loss of enrollment is driven, yes, by the general population decline, but it's also declining child birth rates. It's also increased competition from the charter and parochial private schools that are opening up in the city. And then, of course, there's that general migration that happens for families as their kids get up to school age or are in school, they decide to move out to the county. So, you know, they also surveyed the buildings and they found that the district is facing a very big number, $1.8 billion in maintenance mm-hmm. of their 68 buildings over the next two decades. And that number has only grown since the tornado.
Yeah. And what has been the response to that report so far? And to clarify, this is not a plan. This is a report.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct. So this is a preliminary report, which is preliminary findings. No conclusions have been made about which schools are going to be closed. The district's leadership has been very, very clear about that. The teacher union wasn't super pleased with the findings. Naturally, they're worried about their union members, their staff, the teachers who are saying, hey, does this mean I'm out of a job? So there are major concerns. One longtime board member, Donna Jones, called the report depressing. She has gone through school closures with the district before. It's also important to note that the report suggests closing 37 of the 68 schools. So that's over half of the schools within the district. So this would be if the district and the board were to vote to approve some sort of plan like this, that would be a major restructuring we're talking about for the school district. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Superintendent Millicent Borishade told me that the findings were hard to digest, but, you know, she understands that nobody really wants to close schools. But, you know, she is also heartened to hear from some of the presenters from the architecture firm that sometimes closing down these schools will save the district money in the long term and then maybe open up the potential of building better facilities for students, so maybe possibly even in North City.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And as we wrap this part of our conversation,
sure.
There are still 3 weeks left, exactly 3 weeks mm-hmm. before the new school year starts. A lot yeah. can happen.
Totally.
And what is it that you'll be watching out for, you know, listening for?
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how the transportation plan goes. You know, the district has contracted with a new school bus provider called Zoom. I got a chance to look at the buses. They're shiny. They're beautiful. They were parked outside of the district offices last week. So we'll have to keep an eye on that because transportation was a real challenge last year when their main provider pulled out. And the district has been relying on this patchwork of, you know, 18, 19 vendors over the last school year. And it was a real challenge for the mm-hmm. district and families. So that's a big one, transportation. And then, of course, in-lane attendance. I want to see if these students who were displaced by the storm do eventually show back up in schools. Mm-hmm. So,
we're going to take a very quick break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with STL STL PR education reporter Hiba Ahmed, and a shift to talking about AI tools in the classroom. We also want you to be part of that conversation. What do you think about artificial intelligence in education? Have you personally experienced the effects of AI on learning? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpr.org. After that, we'll learn about all those sunflowers at the Columbia Bottom Conservation Area. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Hiba Ahmed, STLPR education reporter. Before the break, we were talking about St. Louis Public Schools and how back to school is looking a little different for students and families in these few weeks before the new academic year starts. And, you know, preparing to return to school also pertains to educators. And one way that they've been getting ready involves tools, specifically artificial intelligence tools. And Hiba, last Thursday, you went to a summit held in South St. Louis County that was dedicated to teachers and AI. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I went to the St. Louis AI Summit. It was hosted by the Hancock Place School District. So this is a tiny school district, about 1,300 students. And it was basically as educators and teachers were invited from all over the St. Louis area to come and learn about these different AI-powered education tools that they could start incorporating into their classrooms. Hancock Place has actually adopted a AI policy in the classroom for as of last year, and then they started kind of, you know, playing with some of these tools over the last, the 2024-2025 school year, but they have decided, they have gone ahead and signed a contract with three different providers. And they were asking their teachers to start learning about these tools to, in hopes of like starting to incorporate them into the classroom for this school year. So the summit was kind of this, the day that I attended, it was just Hancock Place teachers all the way from elementary up to high school who were learning about some of these tools and were actually playing and testing them to, you know, see how they would incorporate them into their classrooms.
So were there people outside the Hancock Place District there too?
Yeah, there were school teachers and educators from like Parkway and Kirkwood and Francis Howell were also in attendance. And the idea was that they could just learn, get kind of like the 101 of what exactly AI in the classroom means for the future and why it's important, maybe some of the hesitations, and just learning about the various tools that are out there because they're are a lot, Elaine. I get like pitches for AI tools in my inbox every single day.
Yes, and I get them too.
Oh, yeah.
We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts about the way artificial intelligence affects learning? Do the young people in your life use AI? Email us at talk@stlpr.org or give us a call. That's 314-382-8255. The number again, 314-382-TALK. Now, discourse around AI and education has been pretty fraught, in addition to filling our inboxes. And much of it has revolved around higher education, at least that's been my sense. Did you feel any of that kind of tension at the summit? What was the vibe there?
You know, I didn't really feel a ton of tension. I think the day that I was there on Thursday was kind of the last day of the summit, and the teachers seemed pretty game. But, you know, I did talk to the director of technology. She's been there with the district for, you know, over 30 years, Michelle Dirksen. And she told me that, you know, sometimes teachers, you know, are hesitant to just incorporate new technologies into the classroom. It just feels like yet another thing that we're adding to teachers' plates as they're juggling so much these days. But I do want to play you this clip from Dirksen, Elaine. You know, she talks a little bit about the reason why the district should adopt some of the policies. Take a listen to this clip.
I think that when we wait for policies to be made, we're behind. So policies come after the fact usually. And so education's usually always behind, unfortunately. And I think that in this instance, we can't afford to be behind.
When it comes to to policy, right? I should say last week, the federal U.S. Department of Education sent a Dear Colleague letter, and this was guidance issued by the Department of Education to states and local education agencies about, hey, you guys should start thinking about incorporating some sort of policies or guidance around AI in the classrooms. There's a real push from the federal level to start adopting some of these technologies. And the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has also put out some guidance encouraging school districts to, you know, start thinking about some of these policies. Some of the hesitancies, you know, things around cheating or plagiarism, start just kind of engaging with the topic of AI, but leaving the control and the decision with the local school districts and their respective school boards.
I think as we talk about all of this, it can be difficult to understand practically how these tools might be used. And you got a chance to see some of that, right? Walk us through what you saw, Hiba.
Yeah, so when I walked in, they were doing a demonstration with a tool that essentially would read an essay from a student. And what it was that there was a little chat bot. You know, we know what it is, a little, the little screen that pops up in the bottom right corner.
Erica.
Yeah, can I help you with anything? So they were saying that that chat bot is something that teachers can actually program with, let's say, a rubric, right? Where it gives you different levels of grade levels, you know, a student can achieve if they incorporate these details or if they make their sentence structures a little bit better. So a student can kind of plug in their essay and the teacher can kind of see, you know, first the student's progress, but also that chatbot can give the student suggestions on maybe, hey, can you incorporate a quote here, or can you maybe beef up your sentences there, just to help the student kind of make their essay better. So it was interesting to see how much control the teachers can have over these tools, rather than it being kind of the other way around, which I think is where some people feel a little scared.
Right. The math example is one that I found really interesting. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so they were telling, so as I was also trying to wrap my head around this, I kind of came up with this example. Okay, long division. We've all done it. In the past, you and I, Elaine, probably grew up with our teachers telling us to write out the full problem on a sheet of paper and then doing step by step, right? And then a teacher could basically look at your work and be able to pinpoint, okay, this is where you went wrong and that's why you got this answer. The concept is kind of the same with this tool called Snorkel. Basically, students would be working on maybe a device like an iPad or a Chromebook, and they're still doing this long division problem, but it's the device is screen recording. So it provides a report to the teacher who can look at the work that the student has done and say, oh, okay, here's where, you know, little Jimmy went wrong when they were doing, even he was doing his own long division problem. Another tool or feature of that tool is that, let's say you're in a classroom and three students are making the same mistake. It will actually, you know, kind of ping the teacher and be like, hey, three students are actually struggling at the same point or making the same mistake. So the teacher can kind of pull those three students aside and say, hey, here's how you actually work out this problem. The idea here that Dirksen was kind of getting at is that it helps. The language that teachers use is differentiate the learning, but basically it's kind of trying to help address specialized problems among students and help make the teachers' lives easier in trying to identify those problems. So that was an interesting example. At least it helped me visualize what this could
definitely
look like.
Yeah. And did you get a chance to observe what the educators' reactions were to these demonstrations? You know, what was your sense there?
I think some of them seemed excited. I think others felt a little puzzled. I think all of us feel these things when we are introduced to a new technology that we're asked to being, you know, incorporate into our work. But I think the teachers were asking really thoughtful questions around, like, how they're supposed to engage with these different tools and you know, how much control they could have over them, and just the idea of, like, okay, how can they answer their students' questions as they arise, as they're interacting with these tools. So it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, we are definitely planning to dive more deeply into this topic of AI in classrooms on St. Louis on the Air. But for your part, Hiba, are there Are there other subjects sort of under this larger topic that you are interested in learning more about?
Yeah, I think my biggest question around incorporating any sort of new technology into a classroom is it being tracked on its effectiveness? You know, I want to see whether or not it's actually helping students. Is it making a difference in test scores or in their social emotional learning, right? So that's something I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for and touching base with school leaders as the school year goes on. You know, did it make a difference in the lives of these students, or maybe is it not working? And if it's not working, which tools aren't working, you know, and how are districts kind of pivoting as they think about adopting these new technologies into their lesson plans?
Differentiation there too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If people want to get in contact with you, Hiba, to talk through anything that relates to education in the region. I mean, we've talked about SLPS. You know, this is a summit that was held in Hancock Place. Mm-hmm. How can they get in touch with you or keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, so y'all can email me, hahmad@stlpr.org. I'm also on Instagram. I am on Twitter. Or you can get in touch with us through our normal kind of station, you know, emails and whatnot. But I'm always here to listen. There are a lot of school districts. There are a lot of students out there, a lot of families. Tell me how the start of the school year is going. And I would love to connect.
Hiba Ahmed is STLPR's education reporter. Hiba, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.